Welcome. You are about to take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bouffet on the Love by Intuition show. For the next hour, allow her to prepare you in becoming a magnet for a profound love-infused relationship by identifying and focusing on solutions through love. Awaken the light within and let your essence shine. And now, here's Deborah Bouffet on Love by Intuition, all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Welcome, everyone. Bonjour, mes amis. And yes, here I am, Deborah Bouffet, founder and owner of the Dream Vision 7 radio network and the Kids for Love Project. And if you're tuning in for the first time, we're syndicated and we're fully producing internet radio station with all the bells and whistles. You can listen to us wherever you are in the world. We are syndicated over in Europe, and we are also, all the shows are on 50 to 60, as I say, and counting, podcast platforms or directories, whatever you want term you choose to use. So check us out as Dream Visions, all one word with an S on the end, the number 7radio.com. Well, I have an amazing guest. She's doing all kinds of good things to uplift not only humanity, but women specifically, and all the needs, power to the woman, because we are the nurturing human beings, and we are, and we just are phenomenal, and we are still trying to be equal to every other human being out there. And I know Diane's going to be sharing her thoughts on that. So my guest is Diane Wisga, and she is a story guide, consultant, and founder of Quarter Moon Story Arts. She is a former U.S. Navy nurse, a lawyer, and she works with women to help them find their voice. And we're going to hear all about her journey and how she got to where she is today. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Diane.
Thank you, Deborah. I'm delighted to have some time to chat with you and all of your listeners. So thank you for inviting me to your show.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my honor. And this is a live show, so everyone listening can call in. And Bob is in the house, and he can answer your call and put you right through. And he'll connect with you and put you right through. And our toll-free number is 833-220-1200. Again, 833-220-1200. Don't wait until the end. Come on in. I'm sure Diane would love to hear from you. So my first thought is, you've accomplished quite a bit in your short lifetime.
Well, short is relative, but okay, I'll go with it.
Well, everyone's living to be 105 and 6 these days, so I'm putting myself in that category.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So tell us about, you know, what, first of all, what drove you to become a Navy nurse, and how long were you in the Navy?
Oh, my. So my dad and his brothers all signed up to serve in different branches of the military for World War II. There were six of them, and all six of them came home, which is simply amazing, because one brother was actually on a ship during the bombing in Pearl Harbor. And so I had a little bit of that history going in. My dad was in the Navy. He was a radioman. And I fell in love with the movie South Pacific. Oh, I just loved that movie. And I thought, wouldn't it be grand, instead of going into a hospital after I graduated from college with my degree, wouldn't it be grand to go into the Navy? And maybe I would show up somewhere just like in that movie. And so I did. I actually I I did enlist. Well, I didn't enlist. I became an officer. So I signed on as an officer in the U.S. Navy. I was an ensign out of college, and I spent the first probably 2 months in the Navy in Rhode Island at the officer training center. Mm-hmm. The coldest winter ever, with the wind blowing off of Narragansett Bay and all of us lady officers out there in our pantyhose doing our marching in our uniforms. So that was the inspiration. It was partly maybe fantasy, dream world movie, and then certainly my dad and his brothers that inspired my choice of the Navy. Plus, I've got to tell you, Deborah, they have the best uniforms.
Yes, they do. Yes, so when you were, you know, when you were going in and making that choice, I imagine because your siblings and your dad were in the military, did they all support you being a woman, you know, back then?
Well, none of my, I am the only one out of seven children in the Wisga family to have signed up for military service. It was my dad's brothers who were all in World War II.
But my
dad was really, they were all supportive of it. I think it was just one more thing that my brothers and sisters rolled their eyes at. Like, okay, Diane's number one. What do we have to do now to keep up with her? But no, they were really supportive of it. I was there for 3 years. I was stationed at Portsmouth Naval Hospital in Virginia. And the 3 years that I was there, I was exclusively a pediatric nurse. So for the first 2 years, I served in surgical pediatrics. And for the last year, it was medical pediatrics. And that was a huge thing because the hospital was the place where the children of the servicemen and women came to be treated on the East Coast. And we were very lucky to have pediatricians, pediatric surgeons available to us to be taking care of kids. And so from the very beginning, I was 21 years old. That was it when I showed up. And I was getting to see cases and children that my peers would not necessarily be seeing in the hospitals if they had gone to serve in after graduation.
Wow. I bet you saw a lot. And so at what juncture did you actually, did you feel guided, or were you done with the service and you decided to be a lawyer? How did that all come about?
Oh, golly. Well, from the Navy. So, yes, I had done my 3 years, and I had gotten all the experience that I wanted to get. I'm more of a free spirit than the military might have allowed. So I went on to graduate school at the University of Virginia, and from there I actually entered into the business world. And I took my medical background into risk management for hospitals to assess whether they were giving the best care. And how did they assess that? By looking at what's happening in the hospital that are all the risks, the morbidities and the mortalities. And during the course of that, I was told by not too few people that I would have more impact in the world as a lady lawyer than I would as a nurse in business, which gives you some idea of the tenor of the time, which in some cases is probably not too different today from the glass ceiling that women are experiencing. Might you agree with that?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And so from... Oh, go ahead. It's hard.
I was just going to say, my thought is from that to balance or blend together being an attorney, and I don't know where, it was litigation, I believe, right? But to blend that with the medical field, the knowledge of the two of them blended together, I think is phenomenal because of you've got the compassion, you have the clinical hands-on, and now you're in the world of predominantly men at that time, I would assume.
I graduated from law school in 1990, which seems mm-hmm. like relatively yesterday. But sure. yes, it probably was a more male-dominated profession, litigation especially. Now it's much more balanced, women mm-hmm. and men in there. But to bring medicine and litigation together is probably something you would recognize as a healer. And that is in part where I saw the two professions converging. I wouldn't have said it at the time, but like mm-hmm. everything else, when yeah. we look back, we understand the life that we exactly. had been living when at the time, you know, we're just living it.
Right. Right, and a lot of times you didn't question it, but later on you see how everything strings together. And, yeah, so how long were you in litigation?
Let's see, when did I start? It was probably 10 years overall that I was practicing mm-hmm. in law, and while I was a good litigator, I found that I liked telling lawyers what to do instead of actually being one. And so that would have been the pivot to Lightning Rod Communications. That was my litigation consulting practice business. And I ran that for about a dozen years. And it was one of the most satisfying roles that I had inhabited because it required me to work with plaintiff litigators, so the lawyers who represented the injured parties, mm-hmm. to help them bring their client's story to the courtroom in front of a judge, in front of a jury, and do it in that heartfelt, you mentioned the word compassion, heartfelt, compassionate way that didn't lose the lawyerly side, but actually engaged the lawyer to drop their lawyer man hat. So they became a human being advocating on the side of other human beings.
Right.
And in the course of that work, the lawyers themselves changed.
Mm-hmm.
So people, so you've heard me say doing an archaeological dig on yourself to get to your origin story. That term actually came from one of my very first clients when I was working with him and one of his plaintiff clients in getting to the story that we were going to tell. He said, this is like doing an archaeological dig on yourself. and it's true because like an archaeologist, you're looking at the past civilization of your life. You know, mm-hmm. What shows up there in the, you know, in the dust and the shards and the culture, and what shows up there that can inform who you are, why you do what you do, and for whom you do it. And so it almost seemed like it was a natural pivot
mm-hmm. yeah.
to get to that place.
So making it such a difference in the legal world, especially in front of a judge, and changing people's lives who are attorneys, how could you leave that environment knowing the impact that you were doing?
Oh, gosh, what a great question, and no one has ever asked me that before.
Really?
Really, yeah. No one has ever asked me that before. Let me see if I can say. Well, there were a couple of things. Practically speaking, the world of litigation had changed. The global collapse was part of that growing change.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking for new and different opportunities. I was ready to leave where I had been living and looking for a new place to live. And so it all kind of came together. I had walked the Camino de Santiago, and I tell people that my life was BC and AC, before Camino and after Camino. And part of that, the pilgrimage, was a realization that I had probably come to the end of the litigation consulting world.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that we had done really, really, really good work. And some trials we should have lost, we didn't. And some trials we should have won, we didn't. But all along, people got a chance to tell their story. That was the most important thing. That everyone got a chance to be seen and heard and understood and listened to. And even if that didn't mean that they won at trial, what they walked away with was that moment in time where they could say, this is what happened to me, and this is what I'm doing or have done as a result of that.
Right. There, you gave them a voice so that they were, because as you know, all of us, every human being wants to be heard, wants love, wants to be acknowledged, and have a voice in however they believe. And especially if it's a personal experience, they want to share that because that is all part of the healing. And so it's a beautiful thing. Thank you for all that work you did.
Well, you understand, because so much of your work has gone into healing and presence and love and unifying the world. And so I feel like I'm talking to a simpatico soul, somebody who really does get that our stories are our presence in the world. And so I think part of that too is a realization of when things are ready to leave, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a community, whether it's a place that you've lived, whether it's work that you do. I imagine that many people have come to a crossroads and said, I'm ready. I'm ready to leave this behind, even though I'm not sure what's down the road from me. Have you heard that? Have you experienced that?
Yes, and it's disconcerting when that comes, and you're going to move forward, or you're going to shift in a different direction. You know it. You don't know what's ahead. You don't know how it's going to happen, but you know within your soul that you're tying that up and you're moving in a different direction. And it's very powerful. And I think when it happens, and I know that just listening to you, it's happened to you, you were brave enough to take the step forward. Not everyone is, and then they may wish that they did, or they may be just going in a different direction that hopefully would be the highest good for them, whatever they choose. But it's a powerful feeling to know, okay, this is it, and now I'm moving forward. Because, as you know, the human has a hard time with uncertainty, and there isn't any, you know, certainty in the world that we live in.
Your point is very well taken, and that word disconcerting is accurate. And I will say, because I've been musing on it of late, that I never should have married the person that I did. I knew it at the time, and my mom said, well, you're just getting cold feet, and everybody does, and you've been independent so long. And I suppose I could blame it on her because, you know, that's what daughters do until they learn their own role and responsibility in their life. And so, number one, I never should have married that person, and I went through it anyway. And number two, in the course of that, I was offered to be a clerk by the state of Idaho's Chief Justice, Justice Shepherd,
wow,
at the time. Yes,
wow.
And that is huge because normally there's a big application process and whatnot. But I had been competing in moot court. He was one of the jurists who sat on the final panel. And at the celebratory dinner that night, I was sitting next to him, and he said, I know you've got a couple more years of law school to go, but I want you to be my clerk when you graduate. And so, full of this excitement, I told my then fiancé, we hadn't even been married, this opportunity. And what I heard was, no wife of mine is going to Idaho. Well, we weren't even married yet. And here he's saying, no wife of mine. And instead of saying, I have this marvelous opportunity and I'm going to go come what may, I caved. And I wrote a letter to Chief Justice Shepherd and said, I'm really sorry, but, and who knows what excuse I made up. So over time, I think what happens when we get these experiences, these opportunities to say yes and we say no, whatever it is that we believe in, God, the universe, the goddess, whatever, keeps coming back and saying, look, you got a couple more opportunities here, but I'm not going to give you too many more unless you say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's partly responsible because when the marriage broke up, it wasn't me that threw all of his clothes out the bedroom window. And I had full right to do that, given what had gone on. It was him. I'm ready to go on to the next woman. So what's really important here, especially for women listening, is that we get these opportunities to say yes. And they can be, as you say, disconcerting. And they can be uncomfortable. And I'm not saying at every opportunity we jump and go, yeah, this is where I want to go. Just because something knocks doesn't mean we have to open the door.
Right.
But if we sit down and we carefully look at this opportunity and ask ourselves, is it a springboard to something else? Is this a place I should be going? Listening to our heart, asking trusted others to hear us when we talk. Then we can make an informed decision. And I think that I was able to make other informed decisions because I recognized there were times when I could have, maybe should have, and didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So
powerful.
The power of learning, huh?
Yes, but that's powerful. And I've got some questions for you, but we need to take our first break. Everyone, stay in your seat. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a moment.
Experience a different yet profound healing with Reconnective Healing. Includes yet expands beyond any and all known forms of energy healing. The Reconnective Healing Spectrum is comprised of the full healing and evolutionary continuum of energy, light, and information. It allows for healings that are not just physical, not just mental, not just emotional, yet go beyond that to bring healing that includes the evolution of your very being and essence. Deborah Beauvais, trained and certified by world-renowned Dr. Eric Pearl, offers appointment hours at Seekonk Family Chiropractic in Seekonk, Massachusetts. For questions or to set up both distance or local sessions, call Deborah at 508-431-1959. Again, 508-431-1959. Or go to lovebyintuition.com. That's lovebyintuition.com.
Calling all authors. Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of DreamVision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to DreamVision7Radio.com.
After narrowly surviving the attack on Sandy Hook Elementary, first grade teacher Caitlin Roy DeVellis was left searching for answers that would never come. Eventually, she chose to focus on questions that could be answered. How do I make sure this tragedy doesn't define us? How do we get our control back? Those two questions led her to found the 501c3 nonprofit organization Classes for Classes. When gifts poured into their classroom, she decided they would help someone else by paying it forward and being kind. This developed into a social network which allows K-8 classrooms to connect so that every student in the United States can learn these crucial lessons. Classes for Classes' mission is to build students' social-emotional intelligence by connecting them to care. All C4C projects are crowdfunded. Any teacher in the U.S. can visit classesforclasses.org. That's classes, the number 4, classes.org. Sign up today.
Delight your kids with an enchanting journey by reading the Paper Doll Kids children's book by Deborah Beauvais and Janine Sullivan. There's even a catchy tune, Kids for Love Song, produced by Bob Sherwood and sung by kids just like yours. The story weaves around 7 paper dolls flying around the world doing good deeds as they bring important attention to our endangered animal friends. There's even a magical ring with a universal message. Kids become interested in service projects, action through compassion, and planting seeds that nurture positive change. The Paper Doll Kids and Kids for Love Song are a production of the Kids for Love Project. Get the book now on Amazon Kindle and the song on CD Baby or iTunes.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back. This is a live show, so you can call in and talk with our guest, Diane. Our number, 833-220-1200. Bob is in the house, and we'll put you straight through. We are visiting with Diane Wisga, and she is sharing her journey and all that she has accomplished in her path. And one of the things, before we get back into it, if you want to get in touch with Diane, go to her site. It's quartermoonstoryarts.net. It's .net. quartermoonstoryarts.net. When you go on there, you can actually subscribe to her news audio letter, and you can get inspired by listening to the Stories from Women Who Walk podcasts. So we'll give that out again. But back to you, Diane. One of the things that I'm thinking with listening to you, I can see the thread of what you were doing, well, with even back at the nursing, with the compassion and the helping and the assisting. Then with the litigation, you were really teaching them how to give a voice to the clients before the judge. And then I can see where you're at now, where you're giving women a voice. You're allowing them to share their stories and helping them find words, terminology, different things so that they can be successful and comfortable in their own skin. Did you Did you see the common thread as you were going along?
No, I didn't. It's taken me the better part of a lifetime to figure out what you so eloquently just said. When I look back, and this is why the archaeological dig shows up in our origin stories so much, I look back at what I valued as well as what I experienced. And I was an incest survivor, and so the notion of being seen and heard and understood and listened to was probably nurtured in that time, because you feel mm-hmm. invisible, you don't feel like you've been heard. And so unbeknownst to me, that thread was beginning to run under my life. I'll say it's like a stream, and that stream joins other streams, and it becomes a river. And the river that's underneath my life, anyway, is about independence. It's about justice. And it's about freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm.
Those three streams become the river that shows up in the work that I do now. It is much clearer to me today than it ever was before coming to this point. And I think that is true. Well, no. That might be true for some and not true for others, in the sense that some of us get the ideas early on. Others of us, we're back at the back of the class, didn't get the memo right away. That's more like that's more my experience. I know that in reading a little bit about you, your radio network idea came to be in 2004, 2005, or 2007, and so
mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, with the development of that kind of a project, are you similar in the sense that you had a notion of voices, healing, communication?
Well, we have a similar experience, which I always find interesting, so we're connected in that way. The common thread for the experiences that I have had as a little girl and beyond is I'm here to see the value in who I am as a person, as a soul. And when I think about it, I've said this many times before on radio, I think 98% of the human population struggles with loving themselves, seeing their value, and embracing all that we are, whether we see it as a positive or a negative. And so that's the common thread that I have had and worked on my whole life. And we still, as we go on, I do believe that as long as we're here on Earth, we're going to be learning more about ourselves and who we are and the purpose of life and all those good things. And then we may leave thinking we don't know much at all. But
and then we come back again and do it all over.
yes. But back in the day, someone had just said to me, I was in radio, I had a show in Providence, Rhode Island at WARL. And someone there said to me, and this is the disconcerting piece that I mentioned earlier, said mm-hmm. to me, gee, you should have your own network. And it just rang my bell. I had no idea of what to do or how to do it. I was I was unsettled. I was excited. It was everything. And but I wanted to prove that I could do it, so I did. it's funny now when I think back, because you don't know anything. I didn't know anything about radio. But you learned.
Isn't that the way of it oftentimes, too, with women? Like, okay, I can do that. I'll take that on. I have no idea, but I'll figure it. I'll build the plane as I'm flying it.
That's right. That is correct.
This caught my ear when you said, what did you say? I didn't know when I did it, so I did it to prove I could do it.
Right. And then I fell in love with making a difference. And that's really the, you know, the core of all of us that makes us, you know, our heart sings is when we give and we make a difference in whatever way we can. And when I think about your journey, you have made a huge difference in women's and humanity, because you've been doing this now, is it 4 years that you've been
I've been involved in story for 30 years between nursing and listening stories out of patients, the podcast. I think it's the Stories from Women Who Walk podcast you're referring to.
Yes.
I celebrated 4 years behind the microphone, not nearly your history with the network, but I celebrated 4 years of Stories from Women Who Walk on April 1st. I have almost 1,100 episodes out on the airwaves, and the bulk of those are daily 60 seconds podcast episodes Monday through Friday. I try to keep them to 60 seconds. Sometimes they go to 120 or 180. But those were my signature starting at COVID, because we were no longer listening to long podcast guest interviews. We weren't commuting in our cars. And so I was looking for something to lift spirits. And I figured, well, nobody's doing this. To get your words, let me see if I can show myself how to do it. And so I did.
And there it is. Yeah. Well, you know, when you make that decision, as you know, and you're 100% 2 feet in, and you're the type of person that doesn't give up, you might become flustered or challenged or whatever you want to call it, but you stick to it. And you know it's the direction you need to go in. And I'm thinking of soul growth. With your journey, when you think about all the growth your soul has acquired, is there a particular growth or experience that has really gone so deep within you? You know, that's one of the most important pieces of why you're here on earth?
Yes. And there's two, and I'm going to say they are intertwined.
Okay.
I remember someone telling me, and she wasn't referring to me, she was referring to someone else, but I kept it because it felt like me. She said, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Oh.
And, yeah, that's pretty heavy. And the reason I took it into myself is because it spoke to my anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I was angry at everything and everybody, blaming, righteous, opinionated, judgmental. Those were my habits. That was my ways of showing up in the world at times, not 100% of the time, but significantly at times. And remembering that and sitting back and saying, because at the time, I didn't know she was talking about a mutual friend. I thought she was talking about me. And so when I sat back and thought, wow, is that possible? Is that the way I show up in the world? So that took work. That took work to figure out that, yes, I was showing up in the world that way. And then the other part of that that was intertwined is that no one acknowledges me. I'm not seen. I'm not heard. I'm not valued. I'm not recognized for what I bring to the world. Wow, wow, wow. And the work that had to be done there was recognizing that I'm responsible for saying what I mean, meaning what I say, asking for what I need, asking for help, not being so ridiculously self-sufficient and independent, and realizing that I bring to the table what I bring, other people bring to the table what they bring. I don't have to be the biggest bringer of everything. I don't have to be the it. and those two lessons have gone a long way to making me feel more calm and ease, mm-hmm. and more importantly, patient. Patient with myself and having some sense of loving compassion toward myself. And thank God I'm going to be living to 110 or whatever that number was you said early on, because I still have so much learning to do. But it's that. It's facing up to the fact that I don't have all the answers. I don't even have half the questions. But if I sit down when something bops me on the head and pay attention to that, then these are soul growth lessons.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And it's your story is my story. It's her story, their story. And it's a lot of work, but it's I think it's the nectar of life. When you get to that point inside where you can really look at yourself and you can look at yourself in the mirror, right in that left eye, and see your soul and acknowledge you're okay. Maybe you're not perfect, but you're okay and you love yourself and you are loved. And I think that is, it's important to hear, Diane, from other people. Because there are people that are out there, women, men, that are sitting there feeling the same way, and it gives people hope that if they are brave enough to go within, because that's where the juice is, then they will find their way and they'll have a richer existence in some fashion. Anyway,
I do believe that we feel less alone. We're encouraged, we're coaxed toward being our best selves, and that's what our stories do for each other.
Yes, absolutely. All right, well, we need to take our next break. Everyone stay with us. When we come back, I want to hear more about what Diane does. It's a holistic practice of integrating unique values and principles. So we'll talk about more of that. And then I'm going to ask you my question, too, when we get back and see what you think about the world. Everyone stay with us.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. Eastern. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, and to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Come join us and step into this glorious vibration called love.
Delight your kids with an enchanting journey by reading the Paper Doll Kids children's book by Deborah Beauvais and Janine Sullivan. There's even a catchy tune, Kids for Love Song, produced by Bob Sherwood and sung by kids just like yours. The story weaves around seven paper dolls flying around the world doing good deeds as they bring important attention to our endangered animal friends. There's even a magical ring with a universal message. Kids become interested in service projects, action through compassion, and planting seeds that nurture positive change. The Paper Doll Kids and Kids for Love Song are a production of the Kids for Love Project. Get the book now on Amazon Kindle and the song on CD Baby or iTunes.
Are miracles real? Can you move from mayhem to miracles? 30 prominent authors say yes as they share their high fives and down lows of challenges, abuse, addiction, and love. Experience hope, the magic elixir of miracles, through the personal stories of New York Times bestselling authors James Redfield, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Sister Jenna, Reverend Temple Hayes, and many more. If you like bestsellers, Chaos to Clarity, and Crappy to Happy, you'll love Crying and Laughing Through Mayhem to Miracles. Sacred Stories of Transformational Hope, available now on Amazon and in bookstores worldwide.
It's a child's job to play, to learn, and to have fun. It's an adult's job to keep them safe. Did you know that 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused before the age of 18? Every day, families enter the Children's Advocacy Center because of a child's courage to tell someone what happened to them. Keeping our children safe starts with a conversation. This is Michelle Aranger, Executive Director of the Children's Advocacy Center. Learn more on how to keep your child safe. Visit cacofbc.org. This message made possible by the Fall River Rotary Club.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back. And Diane, I'd like you to explain and talk with the listeners about what is your Engage Storyism method.
So a storyism is a practice. It's a practice of story, like Buddhism is a practice of Buddhist principles and so on and so forth. And I took the idea from my teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, who was the venerable Buddhist monk. So the practice is actually a way to look at story as it was before it became conscripted and co-opted by business to sell things. Story is organic. And when it was used way back in the day, it was the privilege of children to sit at the story table, at the story fire, and finally hear the stories of the culture, of the traditions, of the ways that people had learned and understood and talked with each other. So in my world, story is alive. It can sit at your table. It can sleep in your bed. It's very organic. And I don't think that we teach people story as much as story comes to us to be told. And so what I say in my practice is that there are people who can teach you how to tell a story. And I can't. But what I can do is I can teach you how to teach yourself. And mm-hmm. that goes back to the tradition of storytelling. Of course, I can teach you the platform skills. That's easy, tone and voice and body language and all of that. But to actually embody the principles of story and storytelling is something that you do begin to teach yourself until it gets into your bones. And it is a practice of integrating what your own values are. So we were talking a little bit earlier about the values of independence, of justice, of freedom of expression, sovereignty, visibility. It starts with what is the communication transformation you want to achieve? What is it? And oftentimes my clients will come to me and say, I want to get better at public speaking. I have a keynote to deliver and I'm nervous. And by and large, 99, 44, 100% of the time, that communication transformation that they're asking for overlays a personal transformation. But we get to the personal transformation by the doorway of communication transformation. So some of what we've been talking about earlier about the streams that become a river that flow under your life. You've said the same thing, something that is consistent in our life over time from the time we were young shows up in the way in which we are working, serving, being of use today. So I'm always listening for what is it that my client is asking to be transformed and what might be underneath that. So the nurses listen. That's something we're trained to do. Lawyers mm-hmm. listen critically listen. Something we're trained to do. Along mm-hmm. with that comes the training and thoughtful questions. That's how nurses, that's how lawyers get to the hub of something, by asking questions in a particular way. And then with that critical listening, with those thoughtful questions, which has been practiced and honed over decades in my professional life, we apply that to the story structure that is common to every human experience. We all know stories. We know stories. We tell stories. People say we're wired to tell stories. Stories are simply the way in which we recognize the humanity in each mm-hmm. other. And that's how stories show up in our lives. I will say that when we discover that we are deserving of sharing our stories, and we take the steps to craft those stories, to tell them, that's when we, and particularly we as women, defy stereotypes. We push mm-hmm. out on the boundaries. We inspire others to follow our lead. We get to motivate with candor. And so in our conversation, we have been talking about our lives with candor and directness. But we've also exactly. spoken about vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And so that is the way in which the engaged storyism method or process works, as a way of helping women find the words they didn't know they had, to right. discover their stories. And when they do that in a professional or professional way, that is the basis on which they connect with and engage and influence their listeners in some way. Because we're all trying to influence. Even if I say to you, will you pass the salt, if we're sitting at the table, I'm influencing you in a small way. And so that's humans, right. that is what we do. And so that's how I work as Quarter Moon Story Arts.
Mm. Thank you for sharing that. And it gives the listeners an idea of how it would be to work with you. Do you work with all ages, like young women that are 18, 19 and up? Are they seeking?
I think all across the board, yes.
Okay.
Women of all ages are seeking mm-hmm. that place of being seen and heard, understood and listened to. I find that the women who gravitate to me tend to be 40, 45, and all the way up. I'd be happy to talk with a younger woman than that. I do have a discovery chat that is 45 minutes in length. It sounds like a lot, but it's really not. And it's free. And it's an opportunity to say, this is who I am, this is who you are. What you got, and how can I help?
Right. Because there are a lot of, even in, you know, the family and circle friends that we have, a lot of young women anywhere from 16 to 21, they're at a place where, and I think the pandemic played a part in the situation with a lot of these women at that age. You know, they're searching, they're wondering, they're pondering all that, which is all good, I believe. But they might not know the direction to go, or even understand the opportunities that they may have.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And if I'm not able to point them in the right direction or find that there's a fit in the working relationship, then I'll find somebody who is, because we mm-hmm. all, it's never what you know, it's always who you know, right?
Right.
And so each one lift one is our motto. So if
yes.
I can't help, I'll find somebody who can be of use and service.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So shifting gears, with the world as it is, and we don't have to go into what is, but
no.
How do you see the world from Diane's perspective, from a higher perspective, or however you want to look at it? How do you see the world today?
Well, I'll start off by saying I'm an Aquarian. And so Aquarians are the timeless optimists who always see something a little bit better than it could be and are always looking out for the underdog. So I'm just going to start right there because that's the place I operate. I believe in the power of conversation over confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
If we can recognize that even between our different viewpoints, what we are disagreeing with is the viewpoint, not the person who holds the viewpoint. And in between two different viewpoints, there will always be a common thread. There's always an elegant solution. Always, always, always there is an elegant solution. Just like on the Camino, there was always a yellow arrow. You might be lost in the middle of an industrial park that's closed for the weekend and you have no idea which way to go, and I was, and out of nowhere. So I do believe in that, and I look to something as recent as yesterday. All over the world, we were looking at the eclipse, and we were sitting in our lawn chairs in cemeteries and at the seaside and in stadiums. All over the world, we were looking up at the sky, and we were amazed and delighted and thrilled and sharing in a moment that said, look at this. Look at this. And to hold that moment in time, that is what I believe is going to take us forward, that there is hope and awe and nature and beauty and possibility and opportunity if we are willing to put on our funky little glasses and look up into the sky and realize that for a moment, the moon was just in front of the sun and casting us into shadow, and birds reacted and people reacted and animals reacted. But if you look at the pictures, and there are many of them, you know, flying all around the internet, the look is one of amazement and joy and hope and delight. So if I had to hold anything close to me, I would hold the image of what we look like around the world, integrated because of the eclipse.
Wow. Beautifully said. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I thank you for the goosebumps that I have received, especially in the beginning and middle. And now, so I thank you for that. And everyone, go to Diane's site, quartermoonstoryarts.net. And until we come together again, soul to soul, love to love, au revoir.
With appreciation.
Bingo.
Are you seeking a clearer path to love? Then tune in to the Love by Intuition show next week. All designed to your highest good. To contact Deborah Bouffet, owner of Empowered Connections, call her at 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or link on to lovebyintuition.com. Remember, we are all one, and we are all part of the miracle of love.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe. relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.